It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
The Odessa Police Department did hold a news conference today to give an update, but they said they still don't have a motive or a reason behind this crime. They also said that the suspect is believed to be the only shooter, and they have identified him.
You'll notice that I'm not naming this subject, and there's a reason for that. I refuse to. I'm not going to give him any notoriety for what he did. We'll provide that information to you, but not in this public space.
Authorities say he shot a Texas state trooper in Midland as he was being pulled over for not using a turn signal. Then he took off 20 miles west to Odessa, where the shooting continued. The suspect, police say, eventually stole a mail truck and rammed into cop cars before they killed him. This is video taken by a family nearby.
I got you. Aaron, look okay.
The U.S. Postal Service put out a statement today identifying one of those killed. In the statement, they wrote, quote, "We are especially grieving the loss of our postal family member, letter carrier Mary Granados, age 29, and we continue to keep her family in our thoughts." The day before this latest shooting, Texas Governor Greg Abbott held his first domestic terrorism task force to address this particular kind of violence. He convened the task force after 22 people were killed at a Walmart in El Paso just last month.
I'm heartbroken by the crying of the people of the state of Texas. I'm tired of the dying of the people of the state of Texas. Too many Texans are in mourning. Too many Texans have lost their lives. The status quo in Texas is unacceptable.
All right, so over the weekend, another shooting. Unbelievable, as though there weren't enough news and enough tragedy. This is what we have. In Odessa and that part of Texas, West Texas, injured 22, 7 people killed. The injured were from 15 to 57, and shot. The youngest was 18 months old. A tragic story there, too. Not killed, but just shot in the face. Injuries in the face. It's just a horrible story. We know now that the shooter was Seth Aaron Ator. He's 36 years old. We know that he was a trucker, that he had been fired the morning that he went on this rampage. We know that, interestingly enough, after Seth left the trucking company where he was fired, he called the FBI. And we also know the trucking company called the FBI just about the same time. So they're saying very little about him, which kind of, I'm not sure how I feel about that. Honestly, I know that the FBI had a heads up. I know all of his social media was scrubbed, so no one seems to know much about him. And I would be fine with that if I did not suspect the FBI of hiding information. I wish I were in a more trusting place. But that's what's happening in Texas. And I'm sure the aftermath, of course, here we are moving on with more news. And the loss of life is always, always serious. You know, God was very serious in Genesis before the commandments were ever given that we are not to take human life. Act of war is different, but we are not to murder, to take innocent life on of our own accord. We're just not to do that. It's very serious to God. That's why he destroyed the world through the flood, was because of the violence men did to one another. So we just note that and grieve for what's happened to the people in Texas. And, you know, hope and pray this doesn't happen again, but you know it will. Meanwhile, we have this Hurricane Dorian carrying on off the coast of Florida, just marking time, not moving very much. And Bahamas supposedly I'm not sure they're getting much information out of the Bahamas because of the fierceness of the storm, because it was Category 5, I think, when it hit the Bahamas. 13,000 homes have been damaged. We don't really know how many deaths yet, but I'm sure there will be significant deaths. It's hovering kind of off the coast of Florida, so the indications are it's going to go north, but that means it's going to hit South Carolina and North Carolina and Georgia, other parts of Florida. My understanding is it's not far from the president's Mar-a-Lago and other properties in the north. You know, the former Canadian prime minister tweeted that she hoped the president's properties were destroyed and hit by Dorian. And so that's where we are with this, people wishing each other dead and harm. It's an amazing time in which we're living. And so a big story broke between the last time I talked to you. And so we're going to cover it today. We just must. It came out Thursday after the show. Catherine Herridge told the story. Let's listen.
The FBI director is held to a high standard because he sets the tone for over 35,000 employees as the nation's chief law enforcement investigator. Inspector General Michael E. Horowitz found James Comey, quote, set a dangerous precedent, but despite the damaging findings, the Justice Department has declined to prosecute.
In the long-awaited 83-page report, the Justice Department's internal watchdog concluded that former FBI Director James Comey violated his own agency's policies and employment agreement in his handling of memos documenting, in part, private conversations with the president about the Russia investigation. Quote, we have previously faulted Comey for acting unilaterally and inconsistent with department policy. What was not permitted was the unauthorized disclosure of sensitive investigative information obtained during the course of FBI employment in order to achieve a personally desired outcome. After being fired by the president in May 2017, Comey later told Congress he believed the memos were his property to share.
I understood this to be my recollection recorded of my conversation with the president. As a private citizen, I felt free to share that. I thought it very important to get it out.
But the inspector general found the memos were government records. Quote, Comey's characterization of the memos as personal records finds no support in the law. To get the contents of a memo to the New York Times to kickstart the special counsel investigation, Comey used a Columbia Law School professor as an intermediary. Before he was fired, Comey testified on the Hill.
Have you ever been an anonymous source in news reports about matters relating to the Trump investigation?
Never.
Have you ever authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in news reports about the Trump investigation?
No.
That's the first part of Catherine's broadcast, and that was Thursday evening. Now, here's the thing, just to put this in context. We've been waiting for Michael Horowitz, the inspector general, for his report on this whole Russian collusion mess. But we found out earlier in the week, that there would be two reports, not just one, that this first report would just be dedicated to former FBI Director Comey and his memos that he took every time he talked to the president. He took memos and his leaking to the New York Times through his friend, Richmond. And so that was the issuance of the report. That's what we got on Thursday. I want Catherine to continue and tell you the rest of the story. Here it is.
The report found Comey kept the FBI records at his home in a personal safe. The report states that Memo 2 was ultimately determined to contain classified information at the lowest level. Quote, Comey used his personal scanner and private email account to provide electronic copies of memos 2, 4, 6, and 7 to one of his personal attorneys. 3 days later, that attorney provided, via a personal email account, copies of these four memos to two other attorneys. The report made clear Comey crossed the line with these actions. On Twitter, Comey claimed vindication because the IG found no classified information was shared with the media. In one of his last appearances on Capitol Hill, Fox News pressed Comey on whether he mishandled classified information.
Was there a spill of classified information when you shared those memos?
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about something like that.
So, Director Comey,
well, that's important to talk about, whether classified information was mishandled.
Whether you think it is or not, I'm not going to talk about it one way or another.
This is the second time Horowitz found Comey went beyond his authority as FBI director. A legal analyst told Fox a person's prior behavior should always be considered in a decision to prosecute. As we mentioned earlier, the Justice Department has declined. Comey remains a central player in two pending investigations into alleged surveillance abuse during the 2016 election.
All right, Catherine Herridge of Fox News, and that was on Thursday. Now, let me just say, before I launch into this, we're going to spend the rest of the show talking about this. I've asked my husband, who's a former special FBI agent, to join me because I know he has some thoughts about this, and so do I, and I bet you do too. But I want you to hear and kind of help us flesh this out about what's actually happened. Michael Horowitz actually recommended for prosecution to the attorney general. The attorney general declined to prosecute former FBI Director Comey. Now, let me just say this. This struck me right away on Thursday, because this happened almost before the ink was dry on that report. James Comey might have said, I'm grateful not to be prosecuted. Perhaps I did things I shouldn't have done, but I'm really grateful to be free and to be able to continue my life. But, oh no, that's not what James Comey tweeted. This is what he tweeted. DOJ IG found no evidence that Comey or his attorneys released any of the classified information contained in any of the memos to members of the media. I don't need a public apology from those of you who defamed me, but a quick message with a "sorry we lied about you" would be nice. And to all of those who've spent 2 years talking about me going to jail or being a liar and a leaker, ask yourselves why you still trust people who gave you bad info for so long, including the president. That's James Comey's grateful response to not being prosecuted. I want to just tell you the response of some other media outlets. The New York Post had a headline with a picture of Comey holding his hand up to swear in a testimony, and it has an imposition of like pretend holes in his body that are leaking water, and it says leaker of the free world, leaker of the free world. And so that's how the New York Post covered the story. Jonathan Hurley, who is a Democrat, he's on the left, he's not a conservative. This is what he wrote. James Comey wants an apology. This is myth becoming madness. 2 years ago, former FBI Director James Comey came out with a book that celebrated himself as a paragon of ethical leadership, a subject that he later taught at the College of William and Mary. Comey declared, "Ethical leaders lead by seeing above the short term, above the urgent or the partisan, and with a higher loyalty to lasting values, most importantly, the truth." If that's the case, the new Justice Department Inspector General report released on Thursday establishes that Comey is the very antithesis of the ethical leader he described. He ends it by saying, Comey knows that ultimately for him, none of this matters. He has magnanimously accepted the apologies that no one has offered and claimed vindication that appears nowhere in the Inspector General report. This is simply the benefit of being the author of your own mythology. And Kim Strassel has a great article. Kim's been following this Wall Street Journal very faithfully. I really appreciate Kim's perspective. The title of her article is Sneaky, Leaky James Comey. She took that from the evening he spent with the president. The first evening he told the president, according to his memo, "I said I don't do sneaky things. I don't leak. I don't do weasel moves." So Kim does her article's a takeoff of that. We'll come back to that. And I just want to point out to you, John Roberts on Fox, in spite of what had just happened, you know how his report started? Anybody want to take a guess of how John reported this? I'll let you listen. Clip 8.
Since he fired James Comey in May of 2017, President Trump had tweeted or retweeted about Comey 138 times, mostly ripping his former FBI director, insisting that he, the president, was right to fire him. Today, President Trump made it tweet number 139.
All right, there was more to John's report than that, but that's how he started the report. The story for John was not that James Comey was found guilty of a lot of things and recommended for prosecution to the attorney general. No, that wasn't the story. The story was that out-of-control president tweeted about this man 138 times, mostly ripping him. Yeah, that was John's heading of the story. So it never ends. Comey's admirers still remain in the press. But my husband Bruce will join me now, and we're going to talk about what this means. Why is it so important that he be called out for what he did as FBI director? What is his past and his history, and what might happen next? This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The 2019 Values Voter Summit is coming October 11th through the 13th to Washington, D.C. The summit will help inform and mobilize citizens across America to preserve the bedrock values that help make our nation strong. The event will include a luncheon by AFA Action and speakers like National Security Advisor John Bolton, Franklin Graham, conservative host Laura Ingraham, and Senator Lindsey Graham. Here's AFA public policy analyst Abraham Hamilton III.
My hopes are that the people who attend will be fortified, they will be inspired, they will be equipped to carry the fire of Christ following into their civic engagement responsibilities.
Register and get more information at valuesvotersummit.org. That's valuesvotersummit.org. Don't miss the 2019 Values Voter Summit, October 11th through the 13th in Washington, D.C., co-sponsored by AFA Action.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Stephanie Grisham, White House Press Secretary and Communications Director. Ms. Grisham works as the spokesperson for the executive branch of our government. Proverbs 15:1 reminds us of the importance of good communication. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Stephanie Grisham in her job as White House Press Secretary. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. Confederate Railroad derailed. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
I have a new book coming out in September that exposes the left's relentless attacks on American culture. It's called Culture Jihad, How to Stop the Left from Killing a Nation. The culture jihadists are targeting our faith, our families, and our heritage. The latest battleground involves one of my favorite musical groups, Confederate Railroad. The band's name has apparently triggered a bunch of perpetually offended snowflakes. The band's been around for nearly 30 years, but recently they've come under attack by the politically correct mob. Confederate Railroad has been dropped from two state fairs, one in New York, the other Illinois. State leaders feared the band's name might offend people. It's all outrageous nonsense, but Confederate Railroad tells me they don't plan on changing their name. And if people have a problem with that, the band says, don't come to their concerts. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I did hundreds of affidavits for regular wiretaps for mafia people. Well, somebody challenged those eventually in court. But when I did a Pfizer affidavit, nobody ever got to see it. It was my responsibility to be honest with the court. That man lied. Straight out lied. There's no way he didn't know that the Steele dossier was a big phony piece of junk. You read the first three pages if you're a professional. This is like a National Enquirer.
Ultimately leak it out.
4 months later, when he knows it's not true, he goes and tells it to the president like it's real. That's pure J. Edgar Hoover. That, man, I got something on you, Mr.
President. Is there a crime here, or is it a series of unethical acts?
How about a simple one? The signature on the Pfizer affidavit is a crime. It's a crime because it's a full statement under oath. He signed on a penalty of perjury. That means something. Perjury, it's a 5-year statute. How many people did Comey put in jail for a single perjury? Martha Stewart? She didn't even commit perjury. She made a false statement to the FBI.
What about the leak of the
if
document?
Martha Stewart had to go to jail.
What about the leak?
Should go to jail 3 times more. The leaking can be more unethical than illegal. I think there was a conspiracy, however, to frame Trump. I think this was a conspiracy to frame Trump, and I think it goes way beyond.
The players were?
Well, I can't name them yet because they're not identified, but this is a counterintelligence conspiracy. that started with feeding information to Papadopoulos and having Papadopoulos regurgitated to Australian ambassador. It involved Ukraine, it involved Italy, it involved UK, it involved Australia, bare minimum. Who could do that but somebody in the CIA? Comey couldn't actually do that. Comey could know about it. Comey could be part of it. Comey could be a player in it. But there's somebody else who was a brainchild of this. Comey played his part as a liar to the court. And there's no confusion about a crime. There's nothing clearer than you are swearing under penalties of perjury. Name, James Comey, paragraph such and such, total lie. Go to jail.
All right, that was, of course, Rudy Giuliani, former mayor of New York City, former, well, I guess current attorney of President Donald Trump. And he's actually talking about things outside the scope of what the inspector general weighed in on last week, which were the leaking of the memos to the press. And we're going to get to that in a second. But I've asked my husband, a former special agent for the Federal Bureau of Investigation who served under Robert Mueller, but knows a lot about what's going on here. He worked in the FISA court. Knows all about the rules there. So welcome to the show, honey. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
I want to ask you something that's outside the purview of what we're actually going to talk about, because Rudy touched on that. We know that there is another investigation that's going to be coming out with quickly here. That's my understanding. It has to do with the FISA court. And Rudy just said that Comey signed off on three of those FISA applications, in other words, verifying that the dossier was true, which he knew it wasn't, and passed it on to the FISA court. And Rudy says that's a criminal act because he did it under oath. Is that your understanding also?
Absolutely. As we've spoken about on this program before, these FISA applications go through a rigorous vetting, and it's done so that every item that is in that affidavit has to be shown to have been proven by investigation. And then once the agents that are preparing it get it signed off on by their supervisor, it goes up the chain and it goes directly to the director of the FBI. And I can tell you that you don't send something to the director to be signed that you know is false or that he knows is false. And then from the director, it proceeds to the Attorney General of the United States, who again certifies to the FISA court that everything, to the best of his knowledge, is true in that affidavit.
And the thing of it is, you could say, I guess you could argue, Bruce, under certain circumstances that, hey, the FBI director sees a lot of stuff and he trusts his agents and he signs off on stuff. But we know for a fact that James Comey knew all about the dossier. He's the one who took it to the president, knowing it was false, and presented it to him like it was true.
Yes. James Comey went way beyond just signing this affidavit as a rubber stamper. I mean, he was directly involved in actually the administration of this investigation, in my opinion. I think what the report's showing is that Comey purposely went to meet with the president to brief him about this Steele dossier, knowing, as you just said, knowing this was fictional. And it was to I think, put Donald Trump on notice that he better back off the FBI, because at that time he was criticizing some of the intelligence agencies. And Trump was just getting ready to assume office within a couple of days, and showing him, hey, we're the boss here, not you.
Yeah. The other part, of course, of that I have to interject is, the plan was that if he briefed the president on it, it would make it a news story. And so they right away, someone from that inner group leaked that to CNN, and CNN and BuzzFeed came out and talked about, now it was a story, that the FBI had briefed the president about this, and so that was their excuse to leak this phony, fake, horrible hit piece against the president and make it in the bloodstream of the American people.
Yeah, really.
Start the whole thing.
The circumstances, as you read through this report and as you look at the other reports, is it's, if you wrote it in a novel, no one would believe it.
No.
I mean, it's manipulation by the director of the FBI. It appears to be from the State Department, from the CIA, NSA, all gathering intelligence against the president because they decided they did not like the outcome of the election. If you look at the emails that have been uncovered between Strzok, Page, McCabe, various other people, you can see that they talk about insurance policy. They talk about everything's going according to plan. What's the plan? The plan is to get President Trump.
Yeah, to get him out. Okay, let's narrow our conversation now to this recent Inspector General's report, because his report is only on Comey's conduct in regard to his personal memos. Now, Bruce, there were seven memos. It looks as though every time Comey met with the president, he would get in his FBI car and take up a secured laptop and type exactly what happened. And then that would be transmitted by one of his assistants, and sometimes unsecured, a couple times right. unsecured.
Right. I mean, if you just look at that, think about that. After Comey is meeting with the president, it's already been prearranged that his security detail will have a secure laptop, so James Comey can come right out and start typing out all his notes.
His conversation with the president.
Now, if there's nothing to it, why doesn't James Comey just take notes in front of the president? Say, you know, I memorialize these things and let the president know that. No, he's being sneaky. He's acting as an investigator in this process, which is unheard of. Supervisors even don't participate in investigations. They run the investigations, let alone the director. The director never gets involved in actively participating in an investigation. That is until this instance, it looks like. And then you just look at it. Comey will type up his memos, and then his people, his security people, are sending him to the who we presume to be McCabe, Strzok, Page, people back at the FBI, who are basically deciding what will be classified and what will be not classified. And it looks like the way they did this is anything that was said between the president and Comey that was conversation, they made unclassified. That way it could be gotten out to the media and wouldn't be in violation, at least in their minds or their justification, of improperly distributing classified information. But what they did classify were the things that they did in violation of FBI policy. That all of a sudden was classified so that it wouldn't come out and it couldn't be leaked.
And it remains classified too, Bruce.
We still don't see. Now, I just saw an email the other day, and 95% of it was redacted when the FBI turned it over to the IG. And it just has four words at the end, something like that. But it's just amazing.
Yeah, that was Lisa Strzok. Lisa. Wow. Lisa Page to Peter Strzok, her lover. They weren't married. That was right after Comey met with the president the first time and recorded this first memo. But, you know, Bruce, it seems to me, now I got to think this through, but if you have that access, look, I know this because of the work I've done. And you too. We have had access to people who have places of importance. And what they say is private. I just know that. I'm not sworn to anything, but I know that if I have proximity to somebody who is, they're not going to trust me if I run my lips, and I don't. I don't run my mouth. They can trust me. But I just know that instinctively. But an FBI, any employee of the president sitting in his purse with him, talking, spending time with him, and especially in official capacity, if you go out and meticulously write down what they say and then leak it, there's got to be some other name for that. Isn't that disloyalty? That's your president. Aren't you sworn to uphold the Constitution, and that means his position? Yeah, if you undermine him and try to harm him, isn't there a name for that?
You know, communications with a president are considered on their face classified. And You are not to talk about what you... You know, all these people that release these the inner goings on of the presidential office, the Oval Office, that is all basically in violation of disclosing classified information unless the president okays it. And if you really want to compare apples to apples, they should ask Comey when he testifies next time, did you ever prepare a memo after speaking with then President Obama?
Well, the answer is no.
Yes.
Yeah, the answer is no. We know that. Hey, Bruce, I want you to, Brett Baer, Thursday night, went back in his archives and replayed his interaction with James Comey after this whole memo business broke in the news. We didn't know what we know now, but I want you to hear it. Let's listen, and then I'd love your comments on it. Let's listen. Clip 10.
I sent Mr. Richmond a copy of a two-page unclassified memo and asked him to get the substance of it out to the media.
Did you leak other things through Mr. Richmond?
Yeah. I'm smiling, Brad. I don't consider what I did with Mr. Richmond a leak. I told him about an unclassified conversation with the president.
FBI protocol says your own employment agreement with the FBI prohibits, quote, the unauthorized disclosure of any information or material from or related to FBI files or any information acquired by virtue of my official employment without prior written permission from the FBI. Did you have written permission?
No. And I didn't consider it part of an FBI file, all the things that I talked about
you
with Anderson.
You wrote it as an FBI director. It was a work product.
No, it was not. It was my personal aide de memoir.
You were talking to the president?
Sure. I created two copies of it, one to keep in my personal safe at home, and I left another one at the FBI so the Bureau could always have access to it. But I always thought of it as mine, like a diary.
Okay, Bruce, former special agent, you're on.
Well, I can tell you, the last 3 years of my career I spent in what they call Office of Professional Responsibility, which is basically our internal affairs disciplinary office. And I can tell you that if a normal employee had done what Mr. Comey just admitted he did, passing information gained from a meeting while acting in his official capacity as the director, gained in a meeting with the president to an outside source who is, first off, he's not cleared. He doesn't have a security clearance. Second off, he's leaking. He's leaking information, and he's hiding behind saying, well, I didn't tell him to give the memos to the press. I just said give the content of the memos. Now, listen to how he's parsing words. I can tell you that if a quote-unquote average employee was brought in and confronted with that and gave the same justification that Director Comey gave, he would be basically considered – that answer would be considered preposterous, and I can tell you that person would be fired for lack of candor or lying under oath.
Do you know what he actually said to Bruce, to the inspector general? I read, I think it was Jonathan Turley who wrote it, in his dinner that he memorialized, where he claims the president tried to coerce him to let off Lieutenant General Flynn. He gives the exact words. It doesn't sound like coercion to me, but that's an aside. He told the inspector general that he was questioned. You were there as an FBI director. You are the director. You were there. Oh, no, but I was also there just as a human being. So it wasn't leaking. I was just there as a human being.
And, you know, based upon Comey's own representations of how much he does not like the president, that is a laughable response because he always says, I have no personal relationship with Donald Trump. It's obvious he can't stand Donald Trump. So don't turn around and then say, oh, I'm acting as a human being because as a in a personal
– He would have just asked me over to dinner as James Comey, the person. Yeah. I want to ask you about this Daniel Richmond. We only have a minute here, Bruce. But Daniel Richmond was allegedly his attorney, but he had special status at the FBI. What do you know about that?
Well, that's a little murky. Richmond was supposedly hired to do, quote, unquote, special projects for the director. I know when I was there, they had special assistants for the director at times, and even those people were – it was sort of murky. It was like – usually it was a favor being done for somebody, and it was some personal friend of the director that, quote-unquote, he could trust. Now, my understanding is Richmond was given access to all kinds of investigative information that, to me, is unbelievable. He's not involved in the case. He's an outsider. He's Comey's attorney. And I think if you really got down to this, the reason Richmond was given this special status is to do exactly what Comey had him do. He could act as a conduit to the press to get out what Comey couldn't get out himself.
Yeah, his good friend was Schmidt, a writer at the New York Times. So you got Richmond, and by the way, he was given this status for more. The statute says temporary duties cannot be given for more than 130 days, and yet Richmond was able to be in and out of the FBI and giving this information, top secret information, from June 2015 to February 2017. It's a violation, an unbelievable violation. And Bruce, it's almost finished, but wasn't Mueller the one who started this special hiring? Did you tell me about that?
Mueller did do it. I don't know if he started it, but he certainly had these special assistants, and it was always to do things basically on behalf.
Yeah, sort of troubling to you at the time, as I recall. All right, there's more to say, and we're going to say it. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios, along with my husband, Bruce.
The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. David Gelertner is an internationally known computer scientist from Yale, whom the New York Times previously described as a rock star. Well, he's just come out disavowing Darwinian evolution. Gelertner wrote, "The exceptional intricacy of living things and their elaborate mechanisms for fitting precisely into their natural surroundings seem to cry out for an intelligent designer long before molecular biology and biochemistry. An intelligent designer might seem more necessary than ever now that we understand so much cellular biology and the impossibly long odds facing any attempt to design proteins by chance."
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Abraham Hamilton III.
God put us in this world at this time to be salt and light. We don't fool because of the darkness that we're facing. This is not the first time in the world's history that it's gotten dark. God has called you and I to be his ambassadors, even in this dark moment.
Tune in to the Hamilton Corner, weekday afternoons at 5 Central on American Family Radio.
It was a bad move. Target invited men who say they feel like women into restrooms and changing areas designated for women. They probably guessed other retailers would follow their lead, but they were wrong. Others saw that bandwagon was headed in the wrong direction. We're not ready to sacrifice the safety of women and children for the sake of progressive bathroom policies. Invite Target to make a better move. Sign the Boycott Target Pledge at afa.net.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Americanism is formed around certain fundamental values, including love of country, faith in God, and strong families. According to a poll conducted by the Wall Street Journal and NBC News, the commitment of the millennial generation to patriotism has dropped 9% in the last 20 years, support for religious faith has dropped 12%, and the importance of having children has fallen a whopping 16%. These are alarming trends. Christian faith is the source of America's character and greatness. Love of country leads young men to wear the uniform, and having young families gives them something to fight for. Dads, it's our job to instill these values in our sons. I've written the Boy to Man book for every father of every 12-year-old boy in America to mentor their sons to mature manhood. Order your copy today at afastore.net.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Taliban jihadists killed more American troops in Afghanistan in recent days, a clue about their intentions for honoring any deal with us concerning the country's future. Afghanistan's elected president is reviewing such a draft accord. It could amount to a death sentence for him, for others who worked with us, and for any hope the nation will not revert to what it was before 9/11, a Sharia supremacist nightmare for its own people, especially women, and an operating base for Islamist terrorists. President Trump has wisely said that we're going to keep a presence of 8,600 troops in country, complement them with 6,000 veterans who will fight alongside Afghan forces, and use proven techniques to build up the self-defense capabilities of that nation's villages, and we can avoid what is otherwise in the cards, an ignominious surrender that will embolden our enemies and endanger our people. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Who else did you give, leak, or whatever you want to call it, the
give
memos to?
I prefer.
Yeah, the memos to.
I gave the memos to my legal team after I gave them to Dan Richmond, after I asked him to get it out to the media.
You said in the memos, I said, I don't do sneaky things, I don't leak, I don't do weasel moves. But, I mean, we can argue what a leak is, but that's a leak, isn't it?
It's not.
Okay. Here's what you told Chuck Grassley about leaking.
Director Comey, have you ever been an anonymous source in news reports about matters relating to the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation?
Never.
Has any classified information relating to President Trump or his associates been declassified or and shared with the media?
Not to my knowledge.
So at what point were you made aware that some of the information was classified by the FBI?
Which information?
In the memos.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Sometime after I was fired.
All right. So that was a recollection. That was a tape that Brett Baer went back in his archives and Thursday night replayed his interview with James Comey. And honestly, Bruce, my husband Bruce, former FBI agent, that just, to the regular human being ear, that's just, he's full of something.
Yeah.
What a liar.
Yeah. I mean, on its face, he's lying. And again, this is the person that's in charge. This isn't some first-year agent that, oh, really, that's classified? This is ridiculous. James Comey has spent most of his adult life in an environment dealing with information that oftentimes is classified. And he knows that when you speak to a president, that information, if it's not quote-unquote classified, is certainly sensitive. And you do not release that kind of information to the press. And, you know, this going around being the actual leaker by giving it to a friend who then gives it to a reporter or giving it to his legal team who then gives it to reporters, that is, it's almost like money laundering. It's the same result. The information that should not be disclosed is being disclosed. And Comey throws up his hands and acts like a choir boy, like, oh, I didn't know it was classified.
Yeah, ridiculous. In reading so many things this morning, it's reported that Comey's senior leadership team, and that would be, you know, the names we know, Strzok and Page and McCabe, they used adjectives in their interviews like surprised, stunned, shocked, and disappointed to describe their reaction when they learned that Comey acted on his own to provide the contents through Richmond to a reporter. Even they were shocked by it. And in fact, Bruce, one of them, we think we know who that was, became a whistleblower, came forward and said that after Comey was fired, the FBI sealed off his office and went inside and someone was assigned or someone's were assigned to make sure they took anything that was sensitive information out of his office. And he claimed that was everything. And we find out later it was in a, they left it in like a open room in a locked away safe, but it was like in the lobby. Huh. Yeah. So, and then they found out that he had kept copies of this in his home safe. They went to his home to pick up any FBI official information, and he did not tell them that he had them in his safe.
Yes, I can tell you as an FBI agent, you are required to answer completely. In other words, if you are aware that the FBI is looking for certain documents that you know you have, but they don't specifically say, hey, do you have this particular document, but it's related to what they've already told you they're looking for, you have a duty. You have an obligation to say, oh, well, I also have this. Because don't kid yourself, Comey knew exactly why they were there. He knew about the existence of the memos. He wrote them. He knew he had them at his home. He knew he had them in his safe in the office. First off, I can't believe they didn't go into the safe in his office. I mean, once you're gone, all of your official property.
It wasn't in his office. They had moved it to another room. Well, that's why. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Well, it's supposedly a lobby of the office, but it's still the curtilage of the office. And let's not play games here. That's a total game being played. And when the agents came to Comey's personal residence to secure any FBI property that he had, that included these memos. And don't let James Comey hide behind naivety like, oh, I didn't know those were FBI property. Again, A first-year agent knows any document you prepare in the course of an investigation is not your property. It is FBI property.
Yeah. So one quick question, a quick answer, because I want to get into his past that we haven't talked about. Just to be clear, Bruce, James Comey was not a trained FBI agent, and neither was Bob Mueller. They never went through Quantico, right?
No, they spent their entire career in the Department of Justice being attorneys.
Yeah, so they, I mean, they don't know. I mean, they're doing it, like Comey's doing something. He's heading the investigation of President Trump, and he doesn't even know the skills. He's never been trained.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he's acting beyond. You know, he's like pretending. He's putting on his little Inspector Clouseau hat, and he's not qualified to do that.
Not to act like we were out in front of this thing, but I remember when the report started coming out that, like, Peter Strzok had maybe gone to London to conduct part of this investigation, and they were interviewing, and Peter Strzok was interviewing General Flynn. I said to myself, this makes no sense. These people are high-level officials. Now, I understand this is a sensitive investigation, and they want it done right, but that doesn't mean that they interject themselves into the role of the investigators. You, as a boss, monitor the investigation, but you allow your agents to do it. This thing stunk from the beginning that this was a railroad job being perpetrated by these people that I think were involved in a conspiracy to get Donald Trump.
Yeah, and you did tell me that a long time ago, Bruce. This is an article written. Now, listen, get this. This was written June 23rd, 2013. And I want to read, at least give the highlights of it. It was written by Holman Jenkins. It was published in the Wall Street Journal, and this is what it says. This is when Barack Obama was appointing James Comey to FBI. Any potential FBI director deserves scrutiny, since the position has so much power and is susceptible to ruinous misjudgments. That goes double with Mr. Comey, a nominee who seems to think the job of the federal bureaucracy is to oversee elected officials, not the other way around, and who has had his hand in some of the worst prosecutorial excesses of the last decade. The list includes his overzealous pursuit of, as U.S. Attorney of New York's Southern District, of banker Frank Quattrone amid the post-Enron political frenzy of 2003. He never did indict Mr. Quattrone on bank-related charges, but charged him instead with obstruction of justice and witness tampering based essentially on a single ambiguous email. The trial ended up in a hung jury. He won a conviction on a retrial, but it was overturned on appeal in 2006. And so Mr. Quattrone opened what he calls the Center for Fair Administration of Justice, launched at the University of Pennsylvania with a $15 million gift, probably because of his experiences with Comey. And then the second thing, Bruce, I'm just going to run through these as quickly as I can. AIPAC is a lobbying group, highly respected, on behalf of Jews who are, love Israel in this country. And I happen to know many of these people in, at that organization. So they opened up a case against AIPAC. The FBI sought to use bogus secret information to entrap two lobbyists for the pro-Israel group and then prosecuted them under the 1917 Espionage Act. The Justice Department ended up dropping the case, but they wrecked James Comey and his team wrecked the lives of the two lobbyists, Steve Rosen and Keith Weissman. Number three, the FBI, an atrocious investigation, so says the writer, harassment and trial by media of virologist Stephen J. Hatfield, falsely suspected of being behind the 2001 anthrax mail attacks, even though they knew they had the wrong man. Dr. Hatfield ultimately won a $5.8 million settlement from the Justice Department. That was all James Comey. Number four, and this is the one that you and I talk about a lot. That's when James Comey went to see John Ashcroft. Can you describe that, Bruce?
Yes. John Ashcroft was in the hospital. He was the attorney general at the time. And he was very ill. And James Comey was acting as the attorney general in his stead while he was in the while Ashcroft was in the hospital. There was a statute coming up for renewal that allowed increased surveillance of terrorists. You have to remember this was shortly after 9/11, and President Bush had initiated a plan that increased the ability of law enforcement to monitor terrorist activities. However, President Bush had really done a lot of he had put in place a lot of restrictions on this program. Really, it was a well-maintained program. It wasn't like we were out just out there roguely collecting information, which Comey was doing against Trump. We certainly were not. I was not aware of anyone acting like that. Anyway,
and you were still in the Bureau, obviously.
I was in the Bureau. I was at headquarters at this time. And it needed to be renewed, and that required the signature of Attorney General Ashcroft. However, Comey got wind of Ashcroft was going to renew this this type of investigative tool. And for whatever reason, he decided this was too draconian. And Comey went to the hospital room of John Ashcroft and made a big deal out of, if you sign this renewal, General Ashcroft, I am going to resign, and so is Robert Mueller, the director of the FBI. And so basically they coerce Ashcroft to agree to certain restrictions on that investigative tool, and then they signed it. But I can't even imagine that doing this to a man in his hospital room, basically almost strong-arming him, by threat of resignation. I tell you, if I was Ashcroft, I would have said, if you feel that way, then you resign. I'm going to sign it.
Well, and also remember that James Comey and Bob Mueller didn't know each other very well. Remember,
oh, yeah.
That's the storyline here. So they're both working together on this, and I want to get in the last one. The last one is very familiar to you and me. It's probably too complicated to tackle in detail right now. Valerie Plame. Allegedly, her identity as a CIA agent was outed, and so this is when Comey was in charge. Comey gave the job. He had Mr. Ashcroft recuse himself because it was involving Karl Rove. Okay, so Ashcroft recuses himself. Sound familiar? And James Comey nominated none other than the godfather of his children, somebody who was a very dear friend of his, Patrick Fitzgerald, which was a conflict of interest. And even though Patrick Fitzgerald knew right away that Valerie Plame was not outed by Karl Rove, that it was actually by, I forgot his name,
Richard Armitage.
Yeah, even though he knew that, he pursued, Scooter Libby, for 3 years, accusing him of being the so-called leaker. They played it up in the press, and James Comey was up to his ears on that one, too.
You know, I think this is just a reflection of what really, at the core of all of this, bothers American people. And it's that it looks like we have a two-tiered justice system. If you're one of the in crowd, if you're Hillary Clinton, if you're James Comey, if you're if you're a member of the Department of Justice, if you're Rod Rosenstein, if you're people like that, McCabe, you are dealt with completely differently than your average citizen. Look at what these people did to average, quote unquote, people not in the in crowd: General Flynn, Paul Manafort, Stone, and listen, some of these people are not pure as the driven snow, but justice is not to be meted out according to, quote unquote, your status. That goes all the way back to why we fought the revolution. You watch how England conducted themselves, and people that were gentlemen and gentry in that, they were treated one way. The common citizen was treated much harsher, and that's what we have here.
And that's where we have the Lady Justice, who's blind, equal justice under the law. And by the way, Paul Sperry tweeted out, some are speculating that DOJ is backing off prosecution of Comey and McCabe because they are saving them for bigger indictments. I wish I were as optimistic. Can't remember the last time DOJ arrested, raided the home of a high-level DOJ or FBI official. Can you?
I'm with him. I wish I was as optimistic. Yeah, I will see where it goes, but I'm not optimistic.
Yeah, we're hoping for the best, but not expecting it. And so that's what happened in the last few days, and I just wanted to make sure we brought you up to date. Bruce, thank you so much for your service, honey, and for also your faithfulness to keep speaking the truth now. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.